Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hey, good afternoon for those of you on the East Coast, and good morning for those of you who are on the West Coast. My name is Rick Thiemann. I'm your host today of the show What's Leadership Got to Do with It, and I'm the president of the executive group. We've been in business for 20 years. My guest today, again, returning from last week, and as you'll see why, my guest is Ray Klein, who I'll reintroduce in just a few moments. But the dynamics of today's show, today we're going to talk about, in terms of What's Leadership Got to Do with It, is phase two of last week's show. We're going to have a continuation of discussions with Ray and some of the things we do and support organizations in terms of the individual dynamics that an organization might have. And as we look at today's segment, we're going to talk about the organization's responsibility, and we're going to talk about the individual's responsibility and kind of the tools that once we've got them on board. We talked last week about hiring effectively, and we touched a little bit about interviewing, not a whole lot. Interviewing, we're going to spend a whole show on interviewing as we get down the line. And we'll also have a whole show on testing, which we had some discussions on this past week. But this week we're going to talk about the continuation of the individual dynamics, or individual contributors, if you will, as they relate to your organization. And whether or not they're performing, and if not, why not? And do we keep them? Do we let them go? And what are the dynamics behind that? We won't talk about termination as a rule today. That'll come down the road as well. But this segment's going to cover kind of a development process. And if you've ever read the book, Peter Senge's work on the fifth discipline, he talks about the learning organization. And we're going to speak to the learning organization, which is another reason why I've got Ray back on with me today, is because I believe that if you're looking to do all the things right to build a learning organization, I credit Ray and the president to which he works for having the vision and the fortitude to do the things necessary to create that learning organization as we move kind of to today's segment. We're also going to then move into some discussions around coaching. We'll explore the arena or the area of 360s, and we'll touch upon the Peter Principle and the what we call the dead horse theory, which we'll talk about later on. But hopefully we'll add a little bit of humor and levity to the show. I've listened to some other shows, and they can kind of put you to sleep, and I promise to do my best not to do that. The dynamics of today's show, as we look at individual dynamics, there's a philosophy that I have, and it's one of the captions in the book. And by the way, What's Leadership Got to Do with It is also coming out as a book, which hopefully will be done in the next couple months as the show finalizes. But the creation of the book, What's Leadership Got to Do with It, and the show had to do with what I call the fundamental five principles of what I think leaders have to pay attention to in terms of the organizational dynamics that we're faced with. And those fundamental five include your culture, what's your organization's culture look like, which is chapter one of the book, because I think it's so critical. We also talked about culture as a framework for business in our first show. The second fundamental five theory is about individual dynamics or individual contributors. which is what we spoke about last week, and we'll talk further about this week. In weeks to follow, chapter 3 of the book is about organizational dynamics and the dynamics that have working cross-functionally among different groups or teams in the organization or departments, if you will, discussing the silo concept. The fourth fundamental principle is having a strong business plan that allows you to drive your business forward. And the fifth fundamental component piece of the equation is what's your structure look like. So once you understand the dynamics of all those five elements and how they evolve from your organizational success, one of the things that I have is a statement I created, which I talk about in the book, is you'll never fulfill the potential of your business until you get the people part right. And as we explored that with my guest Ray last week, we'll continue that as I mentioned today. Another really neat quote that kind of emulates what we're talking about in terms of having great people is it's when I speak to the fact that it's that you'll never fulfill the potential of your business until you get the people part right, it really kind of speaks to even though I've got a small firm, I've got three very seasoned ladies that do all the back end work that make what I do easy. And when you've got great talent like I have, and again, even though we're a small firm, they work together well, we get along together well, we have a good time together, we get stuff done, we take care of our clients, and we all know that we're here to serve our clients, which ultimately makes us some money. And at the end of the year, when we tally it all up, hopefully we make a lot of money. But the thing is that when you have a seasoned staff that's been with you a long time, and Sue's been with me going on 16 of the 20 years I've been in business. Jody, I think, is now entering year 7, somewhere in there. Debbie, I think, is somewhere in year 3. But I've got a seasoned staff. They know what to do. They do a great job. We all make mistakes, but rarely are there things that we really have to clean up after ourselves. So once you've got that talent, it's just really easy to build your business, and I can go away on client calls and not have to worry about whether things aren't getting done at the office because I got a staff that I trust, and that's a huge piece. And Andrew Carnegie had a quote that I kept that says, "Take away my people, but leave my factories, and soon grass will grow on the factory floors. Take away my factories and leave my people, and soon we will have new and better factories." So as we size up today's program and where we're going and what we're doing, what I've done in the last 20 years emulates some of the work we've done and some of the case studies that we'll present today as part of where we're going. So my guest today, again, is Ray Klein. For those of you who didn't listen to last week's show, Ray is the head of Vice President of Human Resources for one of our clients. And generally, I don't give client names out, but a substantially large Fortune 100 company. But the fact of the matter is Ray's got some great background, which feeds into today's program. Ray, in addition to that, Ray's working on his doctorate and also teaches 5 different classes on organizational development at the University of Louisville and Spalding University. So, Ray, welcome.
Good afternoon, Rick. I enjoyed last week, and thanks for having me back. You might want to tell the listeners so I don't run off all your business that I will not be on every week.
it would be a pleasure to have you on every week, because one of the things that I've enjoyed working on with Ray is that all the things that we're really talking about throughout the book and the sessions really, really, truly is one of those rare HR folks that I work with that really gets it and is really driving the whole equation. And if all the HR folks I work with were like Ray, just it'd be a piece of cake to make things happen. But so last week, Ray and I talked about kind of what we've done around the selection arena. Today, we're going to get into that area of a learning organization. So Ray, why don't you speak to some of your goals that. It kind of speaks to creating a learning organization that's your focus and some of the things we've worked on.
Well, Rick, you mentioned earlier my boss, the president of our company here. He has the philosophy of telling everybody in the organization that we will be students of the industry. So that kind of ties into, I think, the very first thing that's necessary for a learning organization, and that's the total top-down support. And if the president of the organization is reading books and buying books and handing them out to his staff and recommending and demanding that we be students of our industry and then students of management and leadership on the more global level, then that's the big start, the greatest start to being a learning organization. After that, I think, and this is the harder part. The harder part is it's got to be part of the organizational culture to take risks. And that's the part, you know, nobody wants to make mistakes. And you mentioned earlier you're very proud of your staff, and they make some mistakes, but they're seasoned and nothing big or blundering comes along. And that's the way we all want it, and hopefully we choose the right people and we teach and train in such a way that we don't have huge mistakes. But small mistakes have to be tolerated. Otherwise, nothing big is ever going to happen. So those two things are the greatest, in my view, components of a learning organization. And once you have those, then you can start putting things into place.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because I can tell you that of the organizations that I work with where the president is not committed to the process, and HR or perhaps the other parts of the organization, but pretty much HR has a hard time, and you can maybe you can speak to this for a minute, Ray, also. We've got a couple minutes till break, but HR has a hard time really getting traction on the things that would that HR typically knows need to be done, but they have a hard time getting that traction if it's not really encouraged from the top that this is a initiative. So what's your thoughts on that, Ray?
Oh, there's no question about it. You know, I think we've all, unfortunately, if we haven't worked in organizations like this, we've met some people for whom training is a punishment. Oh, Rick, you're not performing right. We're going to send you this two-day class. And so we prescribe training, we prescribe development, we prescribe learning as if it's a punishment. And so that's got to change.
Or a 360.
Yeah. You know, I remember the first time I was sent to a very structured and organized corporate training program, I was like the second person selected. Well, I was mad that I wasn't the first. I thought, right. Well, you know, I think I'm a star. They need to invest in me. How come they chose to invest in somebody else first? And so that's what it is. You know, if the company's training you, they believe you're trainable. They believe you're going someplace. They believe right. You're an individual to invest in. And that's all great stuff. And that's the way we need to market the learning organization internally. And it does have to be marketed.
Well, yeah, but when we talk about, you know, we talked about culture, and we got about a minute before break, but, you know, we talked about culture in session one, and, you know, your president really sets that culture and sets that tone, and it's about having the culture and the mindset that we want to be a learning organization, and then challenging people to become their best, and then providing them methodologies and ways to be able to do that. And Ray, and again, why I've got Ray back on the show is that his organization is committed to do that. And you'll see some of the things as we get into the rest of the show that speak to kind of where we've gone or where we've supported Ray's organization in that evolution. And really, things have really kind of taken a whole lot of traction in the last 2 years, wouldn't you say, Ray?
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, Rick, I hadn't had a chance to share this with you. I met this morning with a guy who you and I had thought maybe he went along with it, but he wasn't the most engaged with some of the developmental processes that you brought to the table. Yet today, when I ask him about some of the most meaningful experiences he's had in the last few years, he immediately said, you know, those assessments I took with Rick Thiemann were real eye-openers. And
really?
It turned out that he was much more engaged than you or I ever thought he was, and much more engaged than we gave him credit for.
Well, and that's a testimonial to someone who takes their own initiative, which we'll talk about kind of in the next segment. But, of course, we won't give names over the phone who that is. But I'll be back down working with Ray and his group tomorrow on some of the leadership work tomorrow. But I'd very be interested in who that was, because you never know where it's going to come from. You can lead a – you know, the old adage is you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And when you get into development and getting people to develop themselves, hopefully you wind up in a situation where they take it and they decide to do something with it, and then change happens because they've decided it was going to happen. It's not change that happened because we forced it on them or threatened them to lose their job in the process. That's really cool to hear. I appreciate the feedback on that, and hopefully we'll get a lot more people that step up to the plate, you know, as we continue the evolution of what we're doing. So. I think we're just about ready to go to break. My guest today is Ray Klein. He is the Vice President of Human Resources for a very large client of ours. My name is Rick Thiemann. We are with the Executive Group. You can find us on www.theeg.com. Also, you'll find in there suggested reading lists that we recommend for development. You'll also find in there we have a whole section of newsletters that come out. One's called Rick's Tips, which provides a quarterly update on different leadership competencies, from delegating to managing others to managing up to managing emotions. So that's a great resource for you. Also on there are our other newsletters, our newsletter Chalk Talk, and our newsletter Sales Excellence are also newsletters there for supporting sales management, sales strategies, and what have you. So we'll talk to you after the break.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, back again with my guest, Ray Klein. For those of you who are just joining us, Ray is one of our larger clients in Fortune 100 company. Ray is a vice president of human resources. Before the first segment of the show, we were talking about developing a learning organization and how the culture and how the top, from a top-down perspective, to drive what needs to happen makes it much easier for HR to focus on developing an organizational strategy around talent management and talent development and the whole talent deployment piece. Makes Ray's job a whole lot easier if you get support from the president. When you don't get support from the president, Ray, have you ever worked for an organization where you didn't get support from the president?
Yes, I've had that challenge of where money spent on training was viewed as just being kind of wasted. And as I mentioned earlier, training was used as a punishment. And I don't know about anybody else in a role similar to mine or running HR, but I don't think anybody, I'm certainly not good enough, and I don't think any HR professionals are good enough to say you can really develop people in an organization where you don't have the support at the top. And the president doesn't want to spend money. Yeah, it just can't be done.
Yeah, and you got to create a budget for that. So in this segment, we're going to talk about kind of is – so we talked about developing a learning organization and the organization's commitment level to help drive performance and drive employee improvement. And so now we're going to – and we'll also talk about tools that the organization have available out there to provide individuals that methodology or that direction. But, and then we're going to get into the individual's responsibility, which is kind of right now what I want to speak to, and that is that when you look at getting people to develop for themselves, when I go into a coaching activity, my first frame of mind is not that I'm going to change this person or I'm going to help them see the light. My basic philosophy then says when I step into a coaching engagement, which I've been in many, I step into that coaching engagement, my mind step says a man or woman won over against their will is of the same opinion still. And what I mean by that is that you have what we call personal mastery, and that is how you see yourselves or how you see the world. And getting individuals to begin to change that framework, I came across a great statement that says, man blames fate for problems and accidents but feels personally responsible when he makes a hole in one, meaning do people really step back and self-assess? So when you get into the world of using the assessments that we use and helping people begin to understand the strengths and weaknesses, or as Dr. Watterson, a friend of mine who will also be on the show down the road, speaks to gifts and limits, nicer way to say strengths and weaknesses. But when you get into entering into a new coaching situation and you're trying to help people begin to change, sometimes it takes hold and sometimes it doesn't take hold. And as much – and Ray, I'm sure you and I haven't rehearsed this, so you'll get a kick out of this and you can kind of expand on that. But, you know, Ray gave an example before the break of an individual who came to him and said, you know, I really got a lot out of the assessment piece and took a lot out of that. Conversely, Ray, you and I know that there's specifically one executive that we've worked with in your organization who still hasn't gotten it, who still hasn't taken ownership, and who still hasn't done anything with the information that they received a while back. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, I think you probably know who I'm speaking to, even though we didn't rehearse this. But
yeah.
But again, the sad part is that this person, and the funny part was is that as this individual I sat down with, this individual said, you know, well, I'm in looking at this individual's results, said to me, well, I know who said that, and I said, well, I don't know who you think said that, but the results are your words because their responses back, their comments back from you about your responses, on how you evaluated your own personality traits, those are your own statements that came back that reflect your view on your personality. So, you see it at all levels. But we're going to talk about creating a development plan and some coaching. And I'm going to use two case studies right there that we began with in Ray's world. And that was two salespeople that we looked at in terms of the development process we use in helping them develop and the overall impact. And we've in this organization, we've put development plans in place for all 106 salespeople, have we not, Ray?
Yes, and that's actually one of the components of a learning organization. I believe you can't say you have a learning organization until there's a development plan for every single person.
So in the world of the development piece of what's gone on, one of the individuals who received their coaching report from us made the comment to me. She said, you know, this report is scaringly accurate. And so when we talked about their challenges that they had and what they could do for develop, there was discussions around some of the things that she became uncomfortable with and how to overcome that. One of the suggested reading books for her was a book called The Influencer. And when I circled back with her the her comment was, she said, you know, I read the book, and I had a recent situation happen with a customer. Under normal circumstances, I would have kind of folded my tent and moved on, kind of given up on it, she said. But after reading the book and reading my development report and going through the process and receiving some advice and tips from you, she says, I pushed on through the situation. It came out fine. I resolved it. She says, I was nervous. And I had kind of butterflies in my stomach, but she said, you know, it worked. So, you know, there's an example of someone taking their developmental activities and saying, I'm going to make something happen with that. So, and I know you know who I'm speaking to, Ray, but we've seen that person in a year pretty blossom pretty nicely into one of the leading MAs that we have down there. Is that true?
Yes, yes. And on a little side note, Rick, that book, Influencer, The Power to Change Anything, I actually selected that as a textbook for, and it's not a textbook style book at all. It's a very easy to read collection of kind of case studies. But that's a textbook in a organizational change course that I teach. And I typically hear back from the bookstore and from students, they say, nobody sells that book back. They buy it and they keep it as a tool. Even after the course is over, it's a fantastic piece. I'm really glad that you were recommending it to some of our folks.
Well, you know, every sales organization that I've worked with, I've recommended that book as one of the premier books for salespeople and managers as well, because managers have to learn how to influence their environment. By the same token, the opposite happened with another person we took in this whole piece of engaging the organization in coaching. And by the way, we're coming down to do an afternoon coaching session for Ray's organization in October on building a coaching organization. But another lady we worked with, the coach, and this is the dynamics around developing development plans, and that is when I asked the manager what his development plan was for this lady, his comment was, well, I need to spend more time riding with her, and I need to spend more time in the arena of helping her understand kind of our pricing model. And as Ray and I looked at her results, and as I helped kind of the organization see what her development plan really looked like, it was really a two-part component. One was helping her develop her personality traits, where her gaps were as it related to her sales ability, because she didn't like conflict. And in her own words, she would literally, after three or four bad calls, go home and regroup. So, and the other piece was she didn't have a lot of sales background to help her in the sales process. So there were actually six books that we recommended in terms of helping her with her development that would help her move herself forward. And while the other lady took the first book and took it and ran with it, this lady, after several, I think it was 2 months, was it, Ray? Still had not bought book one to help her. So I think there's a performance improvement plan going on there with her right now. But Ray's organization is really good about, when people aren't performing, putting them on some type of performance improvement plan. So what's that consist of, Ray?
Well, we hope that even the use of terms makes a difference in my mind. So we're trying to take the development plan as being a very, very positive thing. And we're saying, you know, we're all on development plans. We are constantly having new responsibilities, like every company in the United States and probably the world is doing more with less these days, and there's new technologies. And so for any of us to think we don't need to develop or shouldn't be expected to develop is just it's just erroneous thinking. So we're all on a development plan. And every now and then we take that a little further and we say, now you're on a personal action plan. And the personal action plan would be a situation where your performance is lacking and here's how we're going to get it up. And that is still perceived, hopefully, as being a positive thing. It's the company chooses to keep that individual, and here's what's not right about your performance, and we want to help you fix it. So, but a personal action plan can and does lead to a parting of the ways if that person does not show the progress.
So you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with my guest, Ray Klein. I'm Rick Thiemann, your host. We'll be back in a moment, and we're going to kind of talk about 360s and kind of their evolution in the business world. So we'll have you back soon. Thanks.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theEG.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with the Executive Group. You can find us online at www.theeg.com. We're a firm who's been in business for 20 years and work in the world of organizational development. And our tagline is, we help organizations link their human capital with their strategic intent. Today we're talking with my guest, Ray Klein, who is a VP of HR for one of our clients and we do a lot of work with. And Ray's back on in this second show because it's a continuation of last week's show in terms of what organizations need to do to be more successful. And Ray had was talking to me at the break. He had a comment about the learning organizations, which is kind of what we kicked off our discussions in the beginning. So, Ray, you want to pop in there?
Yeah, Rick, thanks. You know, I appreciate your kind remarks that you think my boss and I kind of get it right. But I think that building a learning organization is one of the hardest things to do, and we've still got a ways to go, just like everybody. I love the story told by the great teacher and writer, business educator, Ken Blanchard. And Blanchard tells a story about watching his grandchild learn to walk. And he says, you know, as walking goes, the kid's first steps are pretty poor. They're really lacking. You know, the kid takes a half a step and falls down and then gets back up and takes a full step and falls down again and so on. And he says, but what do all the people around do? They cheer that kid on. They say, you're great, you're wonderful. They cheer the process of what Blanchard calls, they celebrate just the act of taking a swing at bat. And I think that's what we have to do as leaders in order to have a leading learning organization. You've got to get excited about just giving it a try. You know, there's a guy that I think has a tremendous amount of talent that I considered a great friend for a number of years, but he used to have a sign on his desk that I absolutely hated. His sign said, but will it work? And it faced his visitor in the visitor chair in his office. And it's like if a person's sitting there with a great idea, that sign, but will it work, is staring them in the face. And in my view, it's going to shut them down. They're not going to feel comfortable taking a swing at bat because he's already set the value. Don't talk to me if it won't work. Well, the truth is a lot of the things that we do when we're creating organizational change and a lot of the things that we do to develop and move forward, we don't know they'll work until we do them. And so that whole piece of that Blanchard talks about in the story of the kid learning to walk, just celebrate the effort and allow people to make mistakes. That's just huge to me. And
you know, that's a great point. In the book, I one of the paragraphs from the book says, we can only set up conditions which encourage and support people who want to improve. Learning does not occur in any enduring fashion unless it's sparked by a personal interest or curiosity. If learning is related to a person's own vision, then the learning will be kept alive. So it's about creating that learning organization and creating about in the development plans that you help people engage with. One of the things, one of the sessions down the road we're going to have is we're going to have a whole section on coaching. And in that coaching, we'll be talking about creating development plans and how you help people understand how to create their own development plan, where their gaps lie in the development process. But we're talking right now about, you know, what can an organization do to help an individual? Well, certainly creating development plans, providing them an external coach or an internal coach are certainly other ways to do that. A very popular thing that's done in some organizations and not as much in other organizations is the use of 360s. And we are doing some 360s in Ray's organization. And so why don't you just give us your thoughts on 360s, Ray, and then I'll chime in on that.
Well, I've seen, as you and I have discussed previously, Rick, good ones and bad ones. I am a big believer in them because I think there's a lot of power to seeing yourself through the eyes of others. I think you know, the very first time I even got familiar with the concept of a 360 was I went to a leadership development that our company does, and they videotaped us doing a presentation. I had no idea that I flapped my arms so much. It looked like I was a wounded bird trying to take flight. And just seeing myself on video, thought, wow, I need to be aware of how I look to others. And it goes beyond that visual and the experience of being aware how others see you and relate to you. For some, it's a little painful, and for some, it's even beyond that. I've heard it referred to as a kick in the stomach. But we all need to do it from one time to another.
Well, I know your president is a huge proponent of that, which is one of the reasons why we're doing the 360s on the leaders in your organization. For the listeners, one of the things that – I mean, I'm a firm proponent of 360s, but I believe that the preponderance of 360s done really don't get the traction that they need. Ray, what's your thought?
I agree. I did one with an organization who's they called on me and asked for some business, and their price was right. I'll tell you that. They were very affordable, but it was really done by a guy who used to sell sunglasses or something like that and knew nothing about organizational development and was really selling tests. And it wasn't even a great test at that. And I remember one of the points from your show last week, Rick, that was a takeaway for me was that you're not selling tests. You're not selling assessments. You're selling services to help people maximize human capital. And most of the 360s that I've seen just don't do that. They don't help people maximize human capital, really because the facilitators of them just, they don't know how to do that.
Well, and so I came across everyone's probably familiar with David Letterman by now and his top 10 list, and hopefully the listeners will get kind of a kick out of this. But I came across this, and I'm not quite sure where I got it from, so I don't know where to give the author credit. It's not mine. But I came across it, the top 10 reasons why people reject their 360 feedback. And number 10 is, my job makes me act that way. I'm really not like that. Number 9 is, this was just a bad time to ask for feedback. Number 8, all my strengths are correct, but my weaknesses are not. Number seven, everyone just has it in for me. Number six, I used to be that way, but I've changed recently. Number five, nobody understands really what I'm going through. Number four, this must be someone else's report. And number three, my raters didn't understand the questions. Number two, they were all just jealous of myself, of my success. And the number one answer of people who reject their 360 is, it's all accurate. I just don't care. So I thought that was kind of a humorous anecdote to 360s. But the thing I've seen with organizations in the last 20 years of doing this is that one of the reasons that 360s don't work is that people in more senior roles, especially owners, CEOs, and presidents, really never get true, honest feedback. And that is because people are reluctant to say things when there are really issues there that surround that. The other piece is that individuals really aren't conditioned for the feedback. One of the individuals that I did a 360 on just couldn't believe that people really thought that way of him. He didn't believe it. Even more importantly, I did a 360 on a president of a $600 million division of a client that's a little over about $1.2 billion. He ran half the organization with the U.S., Japanese client of ours. And I even did 360s and went to Japan and interviewed the people and his peers in Japan. And when I came back, provided a whole outline of developmental opportunities that he needed to seize based on feedback from the organization and feedback from his peers and the owner of this company who he reported directly to. And he made zero changes in his behavior, zero changes, and was surprised in 6 months when he got demoted. Because, as you know, the Japanese typically don't fire, so you can save face. But the fact of the matter is that 360s have their way, but in many cases they don't work really well. And one of the things that we do in our process, and we're doing this for Ray's organization, is it beyond just the 360 that comes in the overall online assessment that most people are taking 360s. Is our process takes it a step further in that we actually interview and select key people to interview so that we get a little bit deeper dive out of the process from our results so that we can provide better feedback and more accurate feedback back to the individual that drives them the coaching piece. And again, I know Ray can speak to the fact of in the organization we've had success and not success, and that's based on people's taking ownership in that. So what's your pickup on that, Ray?
Well, one comment that I would make before I answer that question, Rick, about 360s, and we all need to develop, and that's part of the learning organization. The last time that I did a 360, it came back very, very positive, and I had a lot of very positive feedback, and there wasn't a lot there until you had to dig pretty deep to find something that I needed to develop. But I knew there was something there. I knew for sure that there was something there that I needed to develop because, I know myself and I constantly try to get better. So I think one of the reasons they don't work is to your point, people are not honest enough to give straight feedback and they sugarcoat a little bit. And, so people get them back. Even folks that may have some glaring problems. They'll get them back and say, well, see, I did great. It confirmed my own brilliance, and I knew I was
– confirmed I walk on water.
But, I'm sorry?
I said it confirmed I walked on water.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And then the other piece is, something we haven't talked about, people don't know how to improve sometimes. They just don't know how, and that's where the learning organization comes in. It's got to be a variety that, the company's got to be willing to use a consultant when it makes sense, use a coach when that's the right tool, have a video library, have a printed library, have people internal that are able to give feedback and be somewhat of a coach.
Let's pick that up. I'll use an example of creating a development plan when we come back from break. So you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It? My guest, Ray Klein, and I'm Rick Thiemann, your host, and we'll see you in a couple.
The business community's first choice in Internet talk radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theEG.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your guest, Rick Thiemann, president of the Executive Group. You can find us at www.theeg.com. We've been in business for 20 years helping organizations in the world of talent management and talent deployment and talent selection. And my guest is Ray Klein, a very prestigious client of ours that we do a lot of work with, where I'll be back down there again tomorrow. And just before the break, we had talked about, Ray had made the comments that some people just don't know how to develop or where to start, which – and this is a plug, obviously, but in our leadership development report or in our sales development reports, we actually give people examples on how to get started creating their own development plans. The other piece is, as an example, when I wanted to or had decided that part of my practice was lacking in the fact that I didn't have the exposure I needed a development plan to become more seasoned as a platform speaker, to which I joined Toastmasters. I also took a course at Purdue on communications, had a great communications instructor. I read three different books on platform speaking skills and communication skills, and I also did 55 speaking engagements for chambers and rotaries over a 12-month period as part of my development plan and action plan for improving my ability as a platform and guest speaker, and now I'm privileged to get back to certain organizations to speak for them in their conferences and things. So it's easy to create a development plan, but if you don't know how, as to Ray's point, you know, where do I start? And in our development reports, we provide the outlines for that. And we also have a coaching tool that creates and helps create that outline for people to get started. So that's a great point. Is some people know they need to develop, but so where do I start is the piece. So, you know, we're trying to cover today topics around what creates or what kind of sets up the stage for developing a learning organization. We're trying to set the stage for all the things that an organization needs to do based on last week's conversation, this week's conversation. We're kind of hitting and highlighting on some of the key things that are relevant. In shows to come, we'll break those things down into deeper components. As I mentioned, we'll do a whole show on interviewing. We'll do a whole show on using tests and various kinds of tests and assessments. We'll do a whole show on coaching and creating a development outline for individuals. And the last segment we're going to talk about today is succession planning and succession planning and the Peter Principle. As I mentioned, you know, you'll never get develop the potential of your business until you get the people process right. developing succession plans and identifying, in a Ray's case, a very large organization, you know, with 9 district sales managers. Who's the next district sales manager to come out of the equation? Who's the next salesperson to become the next district manager? Who's the next district manager to become the next regional manager as we grow and expand? So as we start to look at those things, you know, the Peter principle gets in the way. And so, Ray, what's your definition of the Peter principle? I've got mine. What's yours?
Well, I believe I've got it correct of what the inventors of the concept meant was it's the point at which an individual gets promoted to their own level of incompetence.
There you go.
You know, I might be okay as a salesperson or a district manager, but if you take me any further, I'm kind of out of water. So
yes. So as we talk about that kind of out of water thing, you know, I came across, as I mentioned, I try to add a little bit of levity and humor to this thing. But for those of you who may have never have heard this, there's a thing called the dead horse theory. It was developed by the tribal wisdom of the Dakota Indians and has been passed on from generation to generation that when you discover you're riding a dead horse, the best strategy is to dismount. And there's a number of things that identified kind of that dead horse thing, which kind of relates to the Peter principle. But number one, you can improve your strategies behind managing a dead horse by buying a bigger or stronger whip. You can also improve that by threatening the horse with termination. You can also appoint a committee to study the horse as another methodology. You could also arrange visits to other sites to see how they ride dead horses. You could lower the standards so that dead horse could be included. Or you can create training sessions to increase the rider's share load. Even harnessing several dead horses together for increased speed might improve things. Or providing additional funding to increase the horse's performance. Even so much as declaring that the dead horse has lower overhead and therefore performs better. But you could also move to rewrite the expected performance requirements for that dead horse to improve performance. Or you could promote him into management. Well, that's a slap against management, I know. But I'm telling you, in 20 years of being in business and the consulting work I do, for those of you who have never heard the word intervention, Ray, would you tell people what intervention means?
Well, it means to intervene, and I don't mean to be sarcastic, but an intervention is where management stops back, stops and steps in and says, wait a minute, this isn't working, and we're going to do something different. And interventions are typically training and development, organizational development type words that mean we identify the dead horse and we intervene to get people off of it.
Yeah. So you know, one of the most significant interventions that I was asked to come in on was one of our clients that had an individual that oversaw. This is a $2 billion company in the auto truck industry, manufacturer, OEM, and then their South America plant. The individual overseeing that plant had been there about 18 months, and in the first 4 months was doing a great job. In the subsequent 14 months, the company lost $1 million to the bottom line in terms of poor decisions that this individual made. We were asked to come in on the assessment side and evaluate whether or not this individual was succeeding or not. And our analysis and synopsis of all the things that we looked at said this individual probably is not going to make it. And our recommendation was, you know, you probably need to pull the plug because it's not going to get any better, even through coaching. And so as we move to the coaching piece or that component piece, it's as the Peter principle evolves, at what point in time do we dismount from that dead horse? And how would we know in terms of our ability to make that determination without some type of formal assessment that, again, that we would administer in that process? But, Ray, I know that as we've looked at some of the people in the sales organization that didn't have it, the same thing applies whether you're looking at salespeople not being able to make it or managers or senior-level people. It still talks to or speaks to filling your leadership pipeline and identifying your talent beyond just high performers, because we can take a high-performing salesperson and make him a sales manager, and guess what we just did? We just killed the greatest salesman we had and put him in a role he wasn't suited for. And Ray, I know you've seen that in your years of experience. What's your take on the succession planning piece and that whole aspect?
Well, one of the things we do in our organization is I'm not deemed, no one is deemed promotable until they can demonstrate a development plan and provide a name and resume of their successor. So we are all, from the standpoint of our own career development, in charge of our own succession plan. The other thing that comes to mind in talking about the succession plan and how it relates to the Peter Principle, I've heard some comments made. I'm a big Miami Dolphins fan, and years ago when the Miami Dolphins were in their heyday under Don Shula, the thought was made, you know, Shula was not a phenomenal football player, but he was a great coach. And so that top salesperson who we automatically assume, and this is the way most organizations do it, we just assume that our top salesperson is going to be a good sales manager. Yep. It doesn't always work. You know, a sales manager is a teacher and a coach, and selling is not really about teaching and coaching.
Yep. So you're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? My guest, Ray Klein, a very dear friend, business associate. We've worked closely together for almost 2 years now. As we wrap up the show, we hope to have you tune in next week at 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 a.m. Central. Listen to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? Check us out on our website, www.theeg.com. We look forward to having you back next week when we get into group dynamics. My guest will be Dr. Gordon Medlock, an associate of ours, works here with us in our leadership development work, and we hope to see you again next week. Thanks for listening, and have a great day. Bye.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.